Blog Talk Radio.
Beep, 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 beep.
Ooh. Man resides in the brightly lit realm he assumes to be reality.
Hopefully it's indoors.
There is, unperceived by most, a netherworld. A place just as real, but not so clearly lit. An eerie
side. I got a flashlight.
Tales from the Eerie Side. That's what you're going to get tonight here on Eerie House Radio. Good evening. I'm Dale Kay from a little show called Spook Show. I am with
Dave Binkley from Weirdness, Really Bad Movie, and Spaceship One, and we are here with
the goat.
Goat is here. Goat is here, yeah.
And the sheep and the dogs and the cattle and the llamas. Watch for llamas.
Yeah, I never trusted a llama. Yeah, especially those push-me-pull-you type, you know?
You don't want to mess with an emu or like an ostrich. They can be aggressive little birds there. Anyway, it's new, old, new stuff yet again tonight. And we're going to squeeze in two wonderful programs that were premiere first episode programs at one point. First, we got issue number one or episode number one of CBS Radio Mystery Theater.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to squeeze in the first episode of Superman.
Yeah. Yep. So hang on, kids. We're going to have a lot of fun tonight. And so much fun with this, as we're now all getting to know Mystery Theater, whether we knew it or not, we're all certainly getting to know what it is now. And this being the first episode, was important for Hyman Brown to come out strong. And he brought in a dear friend of his, Agnes Moorehead, to star in this first episode.
Yep.
This would be one of two episodes, Dale, that Agnes would appear in. It's this one and then 20 days later, she would appear in on the 26th on the episode called The Ring of Truth. She would not appear in another episode, and actually less than three months after the that second episode, she passed away. So that was probably the main reason she did not in more. So obviously, when she did this, and you
well,
can
yeah,
hear
that would keep
voice,
someone from working most
yeah,
of the time.
Yeah. But on these kind of shows, you never know, you know.
You never know.
They were always digging up old people. But anyway.
There's Houdini. we did his seance, did we not?
Seance, yeah. We did.
Looked that
was,
one up.
For, right up to a Halloween time, and it was really pretty cool. Of course, they did enhance it with the music and stuff they didn't do when they originally aired it, but they're still doing Houdini seances on Halloween. Magicians are doing that still.
To this day, isn't that something? Tradition.
Yeah. Yep.
Tradition, my friends. And who knows, someday he may answer.
Just like tradition of being here with us and Eerie House Radio and all these great
speaking of old friends, shows. It's good old Bob and Fogsbane live with us in the chat. Thank you very much, gentlemen. Agaboo, agaboo-boo, aga.
That's close
enough. So forth. Yeah.
But yeah.
A Guinness,
so, but,
a Guinness and a shovel. he must be ready for my attempts at the moral of the story. he's got the shovel.
I think that was to dig up some more actors, I think. Hopefully,
maybe.
I think that's what he meant.
Nah, it's to cover up my effort at the moral. It's going
to
stink.
It's to bury, to bury your moral, huh?
Yeah, I have no morals anymore.
Anymore?
I probably have.
Right.
Actually, I probably have more now than I ever did before.
Sure. Because of all the morals we learn from Gar on our stories here. You know?
I think I've become a better man for it. His words of wisdom.
Well, I've become no worse, and I've lost no money on it. So
no worse. Well, no worse. Okay, that's not too bad. I'm shooting for mediocrity. I think I've attained it.
We are the standard bearer of mediocrity. So there you go.
That's right, as we should. But thankfully, to save us, we've got great programming. And
we do.
What makes this ship run.
You know, we were talking about before we went on, Dale, about, you know, what these radio shows mean. It means a great story, a great script, and the acting, the music and sound effects are there. But, you know, you can't hide it. You know, like sometimes a good performance on TV or on a movie can mask a bad story. You can't do that with radio.
True, because one of your senses are denied, so that audio had best be very good to keep your listeners engaged.
But they can make it better, because I know that one of my stories, I think we've aired it. I forget the name of it. The radio stage. I know we aired it, but I forget the title of it at the second. But it was not. It was. I was kind of pressed, so I put the script together, and it was an okay script. My cohort, Dave Crawford, thought it was probably the weakest script I wrote of the entire series. But the two people, Diana Ray and Matt Anthony, those two turned that into a phenomenal story with their performance.
They saved you, Dave.
You can make a story better. What?
They saved you, Dave.
They saved me, yes. Yeah. But mostly because he thought it was too much like the Christmas story that I did about when she was. But I never thought it was the same story at all. But the coming back to the first Christmas one that we did of the radio stage, where she woke up, she found herself on this bus going back to Cleveland on the Greyhound bus. Remember
that's
that
a horrible.
One? Yeah,
that's a yes. I do. What a horrible fate coming back to Cleveland.
Yeah, she ran away from home 18 years before and woke up finding herself on a Greyhound bus heading back to Cleveland.
So and arriving in style too. you know, you hit the big time when you return to Cleveland on a Greyhound bus. All right. how depressing. Nah. Cleveland's been the butt of jokes forever. I remember laughing, destroying us back in the 60s and 70s.
Sure, you gave us attention. Philadelphia's gone through the same thing. Detroit's gone through the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah, well, Philadelphia didn't have a river catch on fire.
No, they did not. No, they did not.
We have that going for us.
And several times. Several times.
And that, right. And out of the stench rose Erie House. Here we are with a whole lot of radio. We probably ought to kick things off with this one called The Old Ones Are Hard to Kill, starring Agnes Moorehead.
Indeed. And it's, believe it or not, episode number one coming to us from January of 6th of 1974.
The CBS Radio Mystery Theater presents
Goat Theater.
Oh, okay.
Come in. Welcome. I am E.G. Marshall. Welcome to the Sound of Suspense. Welcome to the fear you can hear, but mostly to the world of terrifying imagination. In the story you are about to hear, the heroine is a young woman of 77 who has reached her golden years with her sense of independence intact, with a spryness to her limbs, very good vision, and excellent hearing. But as you are about to learn, there are times when hearing well is not a blessing.
I did it, Mrs. Canby. Are you listening to me? I killed Richardson.
No.
I did it. Me.
No, no, no. I don't want to hear it, Mr. Poulton. Please. Please don't tell me about it. Please.
mystery drama, The Old Ones Are Hard to Kill, was written especially for the Mystery Theater by Henry Slessor and stars Agnes Moorhead. It is sponsored in part by Anheuser-Busch Incorporated, Brewers of Budweiser, and by the Kellogg Company, makers of Kellogg's Special K cereal. I'll return shortly with Act One. And now, here's Act One of The Old Ones Are Hard to Kill. It begins with a stethoscope, a blood pressure reading, an electrocardiogram, and an altogether satisfying report on the health of Mrs. Ada Canby.
Well, can't see a thing to complain about, Ada. That little congestion you had last time is all cleared up. All in all, I'd say you're doing fine.
For a woman my age, you mean.
The older the chicken, the tougher it is to kill. That's what my grandmother used to tell me, and she lived to be 98. Speaking of relatives, you see much of Walter.
My grandson? Oh, the usual once-a-year visit, and he always comes up with the same complaint.
What's that?
Well, I shouldn't be living all alone.
Well, that big house of yours must get pretty lonely sometimes.
Well, the truth is, Dr. George, I'm not alone there.
You're not?
I decided to take in the boarder last month.
Really?
I haven't written Walter about it. I'm sure he'd object to my taking in a stranger, but there's really nothing wrong with Mr. Paulson, except his health, maybe.
His health? What's wrong with him?
Oh, the poor man's had a terrible cold for the past 2 weeks. Won't let me do a thing for him, though.
Now, where did you meet this Mr. Paulson?
He answered the ad I ran. He's just back from South America. Been living in Brazil for years. He's a very nice gentleman, really. He keeps himself and tends his birds. He has the loveliest blue parakeets. You can hear them chirping all over the house. Oh, it's the friendliest song.
Well, I don't see anything wrong with what you're doing, Ada. Just make sure you don't go and catch the man's cold.
Well, there's not much chance of that. The poor man hardly ever leaves his room. Well, how much do I owe you?
I'll send you the bill.
I'm sure you'll forget all about it. Promise me you'll send it. Oh, dear. Mr. Paulson? Are you all right?
Yes, Mrs. Canby. I'm all right.
That cough sounds worse than ever to me. Why don't you let me fix you a little hot milk and honey?
No, thank you, Mrs. Canby. Thanks very much. I'm going to try to get some sleep.
Well, all right, if you say so. I guess it's time I was in bed myself. Oh, my. Listen to that poor man. I wonder if he keeps his birds awake, too.
Mrs. Canby, please. Please.
For heaven's sake. Is he calling me?
Mrs. Canby.
He is calling me. I'm coming, Mr. Paulson. Oh, no. Where are those darn slippers? I'll be right there. What is it, Mr. Paulson? What's the matter?
Mrs. Canby.
Mr. Paulson, just look at you. Why didn't you tell me you were so sick? I would have called a doctor.
No, no, too late now. Too late.
I know a very good doctor. I saw him only this afternoon. I'll go and call him right
no,
now.
No, please, listen to me.
Well, I've got to get help for you, Mr. Paulson.
I'm dying. Confession.
Do you want a priest? Is that what you want?
Richardson murdered 10 years ago.
What?
Murder. I did it. I killed him for money. I was paid. Did you hear me?
Oh, Lord. Mr. Paulson, do you know what you're saying?
Do you understand me? Lindell, is innocent. I killed Richardson, not Lindell.
Well, let me get help. And you can tell them yourself, Mr. Paulson, and the police and the doctor.
You tell them, please. Tell them to free Lindell. He's innocent. Tell them I'm the one who killed Richardson 10 years ago.
Well, I don't know anything about such things, and I don't want to.
I did it. I killed Richardson. I did it.
No, I don't want to hear it. I don't. Please don't tell me. Please. Mr. Paulson, Mr. Paulson? Oh, dear God, I think he's gone.
Listen to those poor little birdies. I suppose they miss poor Mr. Paulson. I'll lay them in his room. Well, let's see about this letter now. Dear Walter, I hope you don't mind my turning to you for advice, but I really don't know what to do. It's been 3 days since my boarder, Mr. Paulson, passed away, and I still haven't told the police what the man said to me. I just can't bring myself to get mixed up in anything like this. Dear, what's the use of writing, Walter? He'll probably think I've dreamed it all up. No, I'll just forget it. How do you forget such a thing? Those names, I keep hearing them. Richardson, Lindell. Lindell is innocent. Oh, dear God, what if it's all true? If Mr. Paulson actually murdered this Richardson, and Lindell is innocent, only, well, who are they? I wonder if it's a telephone book. Well, why not? Let's see. Richardson. Oh, I see. There, J.R. Yes, here it is. Oh, Lord, there's dozens of them. Well, I'll try Lindell. That wouldn't be as common, I don't suppose. Yes, here it is. There's only about half a dozen, then. C-L-D-E-L-L-L. Oh, my heavens. Lindell and Richardson. Both names together. Lindell and Richardson. Investments. 9 Concourse, 4153132. I wonder if... Well, maybe it's the only way to be sure. Mr. Lindell? He isn't? Well, then what about Mr. Richardson? Oh, I see. Well, is there someone there I can speak to? Yes, please. Thank you.
Hello. This is Mr. Chilton. May I be of service?
Well, maybe you can. I want to know about your Mr. Richardson, about when he died. I think I did business with him once, a long time ago.
Well, it's 10 years, madam, just about. But if you're interested in investment advice...
Well, I'll think about it. Thank you very much. 10 years. Well, it could be a coincidence. I guess it all depends on how he died.
Have a seat.
Thank you.
Well, now, how can we be of help to you?
I didn't come here to get help, Mr. Chilton. I came to help you, as a matter of fact. Or rather, somebody you know.
Who would that be?
Mr. John Lindell, the man who was supposed to have murdered Mr. Richardson.
I'm afraid I'm not following you.
Well, it took me all week to find out what happened to those two men. And finally, I found the story in the old newspaper room down at the library about Mr. Lindell being indicted for killing his partner. But I'm sure you know the whole story a lot better than I do.
Well, of course I know the story, but that was quite a long time ago, Mrs. Canby.
10 years doesn't seem so long when you're my age. Anyway, the point is that I can help you, Mr. Lindell, only I can't do it alone.
Did you know John Lindell?
No, I didn't.
nor Mr. Richardson, for that matter. The man I knew was named Paulson.
Who?
I rented a room to Mr. Paulson, and he died about 8 days ago of pneumonia. I was there when it happened.
Well, that's unfortunate, but...
Before he died, Mr. Paulson told me something about Mr. Richardson's murder. He said Mr. Lindell hadn't been responsible, that he, Mr. Paulson, had committed it. For money.
Oh, Mrs. Canby, listen to me.
It was this man Lindell that bothered him. The fact that he was in prison for something he didn't do. I thought I should tell you this, Mr. Shelton, because you knew both of these gentlemen. It said so in the newspaper.
Mrs. Canby, my dear woman.
What?
I don't know what silly story you heard, but it's completely wrong. There wasn't any question about what happened. This boarder of yours, whatever his name is, merely had an obsession.
Well, just the same, I thought you could follow through on this business. Yeah. Tell the police. Because if it is true, Mr. Lindell should be freed.
On evidence like that?
Well, I don't know anything about evidence. I'm just telling you what I heard. Well, never mind. I suppose I should have told the police myself.
Wait, Mrs. Canby. Let me put your mind at rest. John Lindell is no longer in prison.
He isn't?
He's dead, Mrs. Canby. He's been dead for the last 3 years.
Oh.
He wasn't a young man when all this happened, when he accused his partner, Fred Richardson, of defrauding him and shot him dead.
He died? In prison?
Even if all you say is true, that this man was Richardson's murderer, you can't help John Lindell any longer. He's beyond that.
But his name, don't you want to clear his name?
Have you any proof, any living witness?
Just myself.
But you'd be willing to involve yourself? Start a whole new investigation, open up the whole dreadful mess again? Mrs. Canby, do you know that John Lindell had a daughter?
No. But wouldn't that be all the more reason to do something?
His daughter's married, living in Minneapolis, a husband and 3 children. People have forgotten about her father by now. Would you want that poor woman to see his name dragged through the newspapers a second time?
But if her father was innocent...
Forget it, Mrs. Canby. That's my advice to you. The old wound is healed. Don't reopen it.
Oh, well, it troubles me so. I haven't thought of anything else since it happened. Perhaps if I saw a minister, if I had some advice from a man of God...
Mrs. Canby, now you've said something. Now you've shown me the way. That's where our answer lies, dear woman, in prayer.
Mm-hmm.
In the forgiveness of our dear Lord. Will you pray with me, Mrs. Canby?
Pray? Here?
Why not? God is everywhere. Please. Join me. Dear Lord, tell us what to do. Give us your divine guidance. Show us the path to righteousness.
Mr. Shelton,
help us, O Lord. Help us to understand. Teach us to forgive the sins of others and to forget them. To forget. I feel much better now, Mrs. Canby. Do you?
I'm... not sure.
Let us turn this matter over to God, Miss Canby. Not to the police, but to the Lord. It's in his hands now. Don't you agree?
Well, in a way, that's true. Since they're dead now. All of them. Yes?
Mrs. Canby?
Yes.
My name's Stuart Winfield, Mrs. Canby. Mm-hmm. I understand you have a room for rent?
Yes, I do.
Well, I'm new in town. I just arrived from Philadelphia. I've been staying at a hotel, but I'd like something homier.
Well, the room I have is $35 a week. I can't offer you any meals, but you can use the kitchen all you want.
Well, that sounds good to me.
Would you like to see the room?
Yes, ma'am, I sure would.
Well, come on in then.
Thank you.
By the way, how did you know I had a room for rent?
Hmm?
I was going to place an ad this weekend.
Oh, I guess someone at the hotel mentioned it. I forget just who. Say, this is a real fine old house, Mrs. Canby.
Mm-hmm.
I can see that I'm going to like this place. Just fine.
And so Mrs. Canby has a new boarder. He's a very personable young man, with a great deal more charm than old Mr. Paulson had. Perhaps in a little while, Mrs. Canby will be able to forget her former boarder and the shocking confession he made on his deathbed. I'll be back shortly with Act Two.
And we'll be here for that, too, as we complete Part One of The Old Ones Are Hard to Kill. I would not have picked up if I had not known that was Agnes Moorehead, I would not have recognized her voice.
That's why I think that she was ill, very ill at this point, yeah, but still came through to do this for Hyman Brown.
I was going to credit it to her skill, but that's cool, too.
Well, it is that, yes.
Well, not cool, but it...
Yeah. And just think, Dale, I wonder if how many people may have really heard radio drama for the first time on this program of the Mystery Theater and on this particular program, which was the first one in the series.
Yeah, and on that particular evening, January 6th, it was exactly,
yeah,
what, 48 years ago in 1974.
48 years ago, my goodness.
Yeah.
Oh, Lord, Dale.
Yeah, don't think about it. You'll ruin it, man.
I didn't tell you said that. Oh my!
Don't open your eyes. It'll ruin everything. I don't know. That just made me think of something else. But anyway, yeah. And just think. It's been how many years of Eerie House as of tonight? It was 6 years ago this very night we played Poltergeist, the very first time we played old-time radio programming on Eerie House.
Yep. Started it off with Arch Obler and, you know, picking it right up here 7 years later with an episode of the very first episode of the CBS Radio Mystery Theater.
Yes.
Classics. All classics here. Wow.
Yep.
Yeah, I just had that up. Before we went on, that we've been able to share on Eerie House Radio here,
yep,
not including last night. We had we had 1,241 complete shows that we've shared,
yikes,
and none of them outside of some of them, the War of the Worlds, and only one of them was basically a repeat after the first 6 minutes. And another 725 from various other shows, some variety, but some things like your the Command Performance and GI Journal and things like that. Just what an amazing ride it's been. And it seems like we've just scratched the surface of all the programs that are available to us.
Garrett wanted you to repeat something. He's in our chat as he prepares himself for,
yep,
Horrible Horror starring Gar the Ghoul. Who else?
Yep. And he starts, you know, he says that, you know, we were, it was not that it was a lot longer, he thought, before he joined us. Guess what? According to my records here, on January 13th of 2017, that was his first appearance and regular appearance on Eerie House Radio. And that was the second week. It was and we had Vampire's Desire on that night. So, yeah.
Poor guy. Poor guy, and he's still with us. Bless him. Gosh,
yep,
bless,
yep,
you, Gar. Gosh, bless you. All right.
Brother Gar.
Brother Gar. What year? That was 20 and 17, Mr. Ghoul, the Ghoul.
Yep, 20 of January 13th of 2017.
And Fogs Bane gets a no prize. He knew it right away.
Right. Yep, yes, he
Let's
did.
Get to part two of The Old Ones Is Hard to Kill, starring Agnes.
Yes, he is.
Get the shovel.
That explains why we're still around.
Well, that's what the shovel was for. I remember that now. Long train, you're amazing.
Stu Winfield took no time at all to make himself at home in Ada Canby's big old house. He loved everything about his room. The fine old four-poster bed. The crazy quilt that Ada herself had sewn up 40 years ago. The lace curtains on the window. He even loved Mr. Paulson's blue parakeet. But what he really seemed to like best was Mrs. Canby herself.
Just take me 2 minutes to get these clean sheets on the bed, Mr.
Here, let me give you a hand.
No, I can manage. I've been making this bed for almost 50 years.
50? You've lived in this house that long?
Moved in here when I got married back in 1919. My husband David bought it for us. Our only son Ralph was born in it.
And you've lost them both?
Yes, they're both dead, but I haven't lost them.
Oh, yes, yes, I understand, Mrs. Canby. I guess I feel that way about my mom.
Your mother's dead?
Yes, she died when I was 2.
Well, listen, Mr. Winfield, are you sure you want these birds in your room? I could take them to the parlor if you want.
No, no, I think they're great. I think everything's great about this house. But there is something you can do for me.
What's that?
Would you mind not calling me Mr. Winfield?
Oh?
That's what they call my father. My name's Stuart.
Well, all right. Dear Walter, I think it's about time I told you that I have a boarder in my house. Mr. Winfield is the nicest young man you could want to meet. He's a great deal friendlier than my first gentleman, Mr. Paulson, and he seems to like nothing better than to sit around evenings and talk. We talk about his home and his parents and his plans for the future. I think the poor boy misses his home and family, and I'm sort of a substitute for all that.
You know, it isn't really fair, Mrs. Canby. You said I had kitchen privileges, but that doesn't mean you have to cook for me.
Well, it's a pleasure, Stuart. I haven't had anyone to cook for in years.
You're kidding. You mean to say you cook this good without practice?
Oh, you're just being nice. I'm sure that stew is just plain ordinary.
It's terrific, no kidding. It tastes like, well, it tastes like home, if you know what I mean.
Well, it depends on whose home you mean.
Well, my mom cooks stews like this, that's what I meant.
Your mom?
Mm.
But she died when you were only 2.
Oh, well, I guess I didn't mean my mom exactly. I was thinking of my Aunt Martha. I mean, she's the one who sort of took over the cooking and stuff after my mother died. And my father's sister, you know?
I see. Well, that was lucky that you had someone to take her place.
Yeah, that's right. Excuse me.
My, Stuart, you're not coming down with anything, are you?
No, I'm fine. Just a little case of the sniffles.
Listen, if your room isn't warm enough, I have an extra bucket.
No, the room's just fine. Don't worry about it.
Well, you'll be sure now. I know I felt a little guilty about poor Mr. Paulson when he got sick. Maybe I didn't take good enough care of him.
Paulson?
Mm-hmm.
Was that your former boarder, the bird lover?
Yes, that was his name, the poor man.
Well, tell me about him.
Well, I don't really know that much about him. He lived here less than 2 months.
What sort of a guy was he?
Very quiet. He kept to himself.
Did you say he was from South America?
I don't remember if I did or not.
Well, you must have said it.
Yes, of course. He was American, but he'd been living in Brazil. I don't know why exactly. Although, come to think of it, maybe I do.
What do you mean?
Well, it just occurred to me that Brazil might be just the place for someone who came into a lot of money and wanted to leave the country.
I don't understand.
I really think you are getting a cold, Stuart. I'm getting that blanket out this minute.
Now, wait, Mrs. Canby. I'd rather hear about...
Never mind. I don't want to take any chances. I'll be right back.
Yes, Mrs. Canby. Don't take any chances.
Stuart?
Yes? Come in.
I brought you a tray, Stuart.
Oh. No, you shouldn't have. You shouldn't have gone to all that trouble, Mrs. Kennedy.
It wasn't the least bit of trouble. Besides, you've got to have some supper. Feed a cold and starve a fever. That's what
I mean. I was going to come out to the kitchen and get myself a sandwich or something. You didn't have to bring it to me. Oh, look at that. Is that roast chicken?
Well, that's what it's supposed to be. I hope it tastes all right.
Noodle soup with dumplings. Mrs. Canby, you're spoiling me rotten. Do you know that?
Yeah, I just thought it'd be a good idea if you stayed in bed and took it easy. You weren't planning to go out tonight, were you?
No, I was just going to stay in and read for a while. Maybe watch television.
Oh, that's good. Here, I'll just set this tray down.
Oh, the service here is just too good. Oh, we never finished our talk the other day about that boarder of yours, Mr. Paulson.
Well, there's not much to say about him, really.
Well, you said something about his living in South America. You said you thought you understood why he was living there. Sounded real interesting.
Well, the truth is, Stuart, there is something to tell about Mr. Paulson. Maybe you can help me feel better about it all.
About what?
Now, I'm not going to tell you if you don't eat.
All right, Mrs. Canby, I'll eat.
Well, it happened just about 3 weeks ago.
You know something, Mrs. Canby? That's about the best roast chicken I've had in years.
I'm sure I spoiled your appetite with all my chatter.
No, that was a really interesting story.
But what do you think of it all, Stuart?
Hmm?
Do you think I did the right thing?
Well, frankly, Mrs. Canby, I do.
Honestly?
Well, this guy Chelton sounds a little screwy, but I think he's all right. I mean, from a practical standpoint.
Then you agree with him?
Sure. This man Richardson's dead, right? And what's his name, Lindell?
Yes.
Well, he's dead too, right?
And poor Mr. Paulson, the man who supposedly killed Richardson.
Well, there you are. Nothing you can do will bring any of them back, right?
Well, yes, but just the same.
And you know the police, Mrs. Canby. They'll be hounding you forever. Tracking mud into your parlor, bothering you with questions. No, Mrs. Canby, you're too nice a person to put up with that kind of thing.
You mean too old a person?
I just think Mr. Chelton was right. Let sleeping dogs lie.
Yes, that's what I keep telling myself, but you know something?
What?
There's one thing Mr. Chelton forgot. And me too, I suppose.
What's that?
Why, the real murderer. He may still be alive, even if all the others are gone. Don't you see?
No, I don't.
Even if Mr. Lindell can't be helped anymore, that doesn't mean the real murderer should get away.
But the real murderer is dead. Paulson.
No, the killer is the man who hired Mr. Paulson. Don't you see? Is it right that he should get away with it?
Now, wait a minute. You're jumping to conclusions.
No, I'm not. Mr. Paulson told me that he was hired to do this thing.
Well, maybe he was hired by Lindell. Maybe Lindell hired him, and then Paulson got cold feet, and Lindell did the shooting himself.
No, I'm sure that isn't true. You see, I read the newspaper article all about it.
Well, you really were thorough about this, weren't you, Mrs. Canby?
You poor man. That cold's gone to your chest now, hasn't it?
No, I'm all right. Stop worrying about me. Let's talk about this other problem of yours.
Well, maybe I'm making it more of a problem than it should be. Maybe if I just told the police everything, I could forget it once and for all.
No, I really couldn't advise that, Mrs. Canby.
Well, it said in the newspaper story that the two men were partners in that investment firm. And Mr. Lindell thought that his partner, Richardson, was cheating, taking money out of the firm. And that's why he's supposed to have shot him.
Wasn't there a witness to the shooting?
Why, yes, I think there was. Come to think of it, it was Mr. Shelton. That's right.
Well, doesn't that wrap it up for you?
Well, it would if it wasn't for Mr. Paulson.
Listen, Mrs. Canby, you know how much I like you. Why, in just a few days, you're more like family to me than my Aunt Martha ever was.
Well, it's nice of you to say, Stuart.
And that's why I want you to listen to me about this. That's why I want you to forget about this whole foolish thing. And
listen to you. You sound awful, Stuart. Just tell me.
No, I'm all right.
No, you're not all right. I'm going to get you some cough medicine right this minute.
Mr. Chilton, it's me, Winfield.
Well, what's happening?
I think I better stick around for a few more days, Mr. Chilton. The old lady's beginning to get fidgety, if you know what I mean.
Well, something tells me that Stuart Winfield isn't such a nice young man after all. Could it be that he wasn't telling Mrs. Canby the truth about his dear mother and his Aunt Martha? Could he have not told her the truth about his plans for the future? Of course, the real issue is, what sort of plan does he have for Ada Canby's future? I'll be back shortly with Act 3.
I'm High Brown, and as producer of Radio Mystery Theater, welcome to the premiere of an exciting venture in modern radio. The return of spine-tingling suspense and mystery 7 times a week with fine actors and actresses and one other star player. Your imagination. We'd like to hear whether you're glad radio drama is back. So we're holding a weekly drawing for 3 weeks with 50 prizes a week, 2 AM-FM stereo phonos, 2 travel clock radios, and 46 anthologies of modern suspense. All you do is send us your name and address to Mystery Theater, Box 50, Radio City Station, New York 119. Box 50, Radio City Station, New York 119. Offer good everywhere unless locally prohibited.
Or we don't like you.
Or it's too long ago. Yes.
Yes.
I had to get in that time machine and fill that out and get one of those. Actually, I do have one of those anthologies. They put out, I think it put Random House, I think later put it out for all to buy, and there are quite a few of those hanging around. I do have one. It has I think 4 different episodes of the Mystery Theater in there, kind of written back from script form back into story form. Kind of cool.
You know, as a Ute, I would always go through like record stores and stuff for a variety of reasons, mostly my own enjoyment, but in any event, I would see these collections of old-time radio programs at times. And I always thought, oh, I'd love to get, you know, listen to those and blah, blah, blah. And I just never got around to it. But then here we are today.
Yep.
Dave, you and I, and Gar and CW presenting these programs to everybody every weekend. This is awesome.
Yeah. It has been so much fun. You know, when I was listening to radio programs, it was basically by myself or sometimes with my brother, but mostly it was by myself. And I'm thinking, man, here I am not only listening to them, but sharing them with you and everyone that shows up, not only here, but in the archive. And it is just, Dale, I can't tell you how good it makes me feel to help people who never really experienced a whole lot of it really get the depth. And we've in the last couple of years, we've really gone into sharing comedic shows and things like that as well.
Oh, yeah. We love the eerie aspect of what we're doing, but definitely we jump genres from time to time. And it's fun doing it. It's been a wild ride, kids. And more to fun, more to follow as far as we can tell.
Oh, yeah. I mean, just think if you did Mystery Theaters, you got what? How many of those? Hang on. I can pull it up here.
1,800, if I'm not
something
mistaken.
Something like that. There we go. 1,399, episodes all in all. Now, are all of them worth resharing? No. But, you know, when you're on 7 nights a week, you're going to have some. Not that they're bad. It's just that they're not as good as others, you know?
Yeah. Well, who knows? We may get to all of them.
A lot of them were. There were quite a few that were about husbands and wives trying to kill each other off, that kind of a thing.
We already said we do comedies.
Yeah. Well, I thought these were docudramas, you know?
You gotta be careful here. Yeah. Our lawyers have asked us not to, you know, go too much farther with that. But anyway.
And no naming names. Yeah, that's true.
No names. Or you'll be visited by a guy named Knuckles.
Yeah, but it ain't Knuckles. His Knuckles I'm worried about.
Nope. Yeah, Siri. CBS Radio Mystery Theater. Their first one, 1974, Dave. It was a lad of...
Yeah, I don't even think of that until you said it was like, you know, 58 years ago.
48.
Or 48 years ago, you know. It just
48 years ago.
It boggles my mind.
I was just about to turn 14 when this program came out.
Yeah, and I was still a 13-er myself.
Yep. I was 13, but not for much longer.
Yeah.
At this point in time, those many years ago. Ad infinitum.
But yet, we can still enjoy them today. That's the great thing.
Yep, and let's continue to enjoy. The old ones are hard to kill. We're going to wrap this one up. Stick around for the Superman coming up, his origin story, and the very first Superman broadcast right after this.
Poor Mrs. Canby. She isn't sleeping well tonight. But of course, Mrs. Canby has good reasons for insomnia. Her thoughts are whirling. Her boarder, Stewart, was right. She doesn't want the bother of going to the police. And she firmly believes in the old adage, if you don't trouble trouble, trouble won't trouble you. But still...
Oh, my... I'm just never going to get to sleep tonight. Poor Stuart. He's still coughing. I'm sure that room is just too drafty. We never should have let any boarders in until I got the windows fixed. Oh, dear. That poor boy. I'll never forget the terrible night Mr. Paulson was coughing so badly. And the way he looked, all gray and shrunken. If only I knew he was so sick. No. If only he'd never even come to this house.
Mrs. Canby, I killed Richardson. I did it.
Do I ever forget the sound of that man's voice?
Lindell is innocent. Lindell is innocent.
That poor man. All the years he spent in jail for something he didn't do.
Let sleeping dogs lie, Mrs. Canby. My Aunt Martha always said, let sleeping dogs lie.
Oh, if only I could get some sleep.
Let us turn this matter over to God, Mrs. Canby. Not to the police. Not to the police. Not to the police.
What a strange man he is, that Mr. Shelton. Way he talked about God, praying at his desk. Of course, God is everywhere, but his desk.
I killed Richardson. I murdered him for money. I was paid.
Paid. Someone had to pay him. Mr. Paulson wasn't the only guilty one. Someone else was, too.
Forget.
Oh,
dear Lord, Mr. Chelton. What did that newspaper article say? The chief witness against Mr. Lindell was Arnold Chelton. But how could he be a witness to something that never happened? How could he be? I'll have to tell someone. I'll have to talk to someone. Yes, I'll tell Stuart about it in the morning. Are you awake?
Yes, I'm up, Mrs. Canby. Come in.
Oh. Oh, no. Now, don't tell me I'm getting breakfast in bed, too.
Well, I know you had a terrible night last night, Stuart. You were coughing much worse than ever. I guess that medicine wasn't very good.
Sorry I kept you awake, Mrs. Canby.
No, that wasn't your fault. Oh, something else kept me up.
What was that?
Oh, my mind, I guess. Maybe I should say my conscience.
Well, that sounds serious.
But it is something serious, Stuart. Well, I might have let a man get away with murder. No, it's even worse than that. He did something worse than murder.
You're talking about Paulson again.
No, I'm talking about the man who hired Mr. Paulson. He didn't just have that man Richardson shot. He let an innocent person go to jail and die there. Now, that's like committing two murders, if you ask me. Well, I have to tell you something that occurred to me last night.
Sure, go ahead.
Well, it's about Mr. Chelton. Mr. Arnold Chelton.
Yeah? Go on. I'm listening.
Stuart, I wonder if maybe the reason Mr. Chelton was so upset with me, the reason he didn't want me to go to the police, was because he was afraid.
Explain what you mean.
Well, what I mean is maybe Mr. Chelton had good reason besides the one he told me. He was working for both Mr. Richardson and Mr. Lindell at the time of the murder.
Well, so what?
Well, he was also the chief witness at the trial, a witness for the prosecution.
But he saw the shooting, didn't he?
But that's just the point. He saw Mr. Lindell shoot Mr. Richardson.
Well, that's not what you told me last time. I mean that he was an eyewitness.
No, that's right. He didn't actually see the shooting. He was miles away when it happened. I don't quite remember the details.
There was something about a phone call, maybe?
Yes, that's what it was. He claimed that Mr. Richardson was talking to him on the phone when Mr. Lindell showed up at his apartment. He said that Richardson cried out something about Lindell having a gun.
And then he heard the shot.
But how could that have happened if the gun was fired by Mr. Paulson?
If, Mrs. Canby, that's the big little word, isn't it? If.
But don't you see what I'm saying, Stuart? Arnold Chelton had the most to gain.
Gain? From what?
From both these men leaving the firm. That'd leave the whole thing to him. All those customers, all the investments he handled, all the commissions, or whatever they call it.
Are you accusing this guy Chelton of being the killer?
Yes. It's the only answer, Stuart.
Well, look, if that was the case, the police would have figured it out.
But they didn't. There was nothing in the stories I read that pointed any suspicion at Mr. Chelton. I don't suppose it even occurred to them. And now, the company is all his.
Well, you don't call that evidence, do you?
Well, then why didn't he let me go to the police? Why did he try so hard to talk me out of it? That man was praying, Stuart. He was taking the name of the Lord in vain. Oh, I'm sorry, Stuart. I'm so sorry. I won't bother you anymore. I know what I have to do anyway.
Mrs. Canby.
I won't
wait.
Be gone long, Stuart.
No, wait.
But the minute I get back, I'm going to call Dr. George and ask him to come over.
You're sick.
Never mind the doctor. You're calling the police.
No, no, I won't call them. You're right. I don't want them tracking mud in my parlor. I'm going down to the station house and talk to them. I'll get dressed now and go straight there.
Please, please think about what you're doing.
I'll tell them what I know, and they can do the rest. Now, you try to eat something, Stuart. Please.
Mrs. Candy. Sheldon?
What is this, Winfield? I told you not to call me at the office.
It's an emergency.
You sound terrible. What's the matter with you?
I'm sick. Only you're going to be a lot sicker.
What are you talking about?
The old lady. I can't stop her. She's decided to talk.
What?
She figured it out. Figured out exactly what you did, Sheldon, and how you did it.
You fool. You've got to stop her. Do you hear me?
That wasn't part of the deal, Sheldon.
It's all of the deal now.
The price didn't include anything like that.
The price just doubled. Old ladies are always having accidents. Make her have one. Make her have one now, Winfield.
Yeah. All right. She's gonna have a fall down the cellar steps. Right now. I gotta get my robe on and my slippers. I gotta hurry.
Stuart? Is that you?
Open up, Mrs. Candy.
Heaven's sake. Stuart Winfield, what are you doing out of bed? Now, you go right back there this second.
I gotta talk to you, Mrs. Candy, before you go to the police.
Just listen to you. You're all winded. You can hardly talk, Stuart. Now, go back to bed before you catch pneumonia, too.
Now, don't go, Mrs. Candy. It would be better if you never went to the police. Better for you. Better for me.
For you? I don't understand.
Well, then I wouldn't have to hurt you, Mrs. Candy. That's what I mean. I wouldn't have to do anything bad to you.
Stuart, what in the world are you talking about?
Come on, old lady. You're smart, all right. You really think things through. So now think a little harder.
You knew? Stuart, you knew about Mr. Paul?
That's right.
That's how you knew my room was so bad, because Mr. Shelton told you.
Now you're getting there, Mrs. Candy.
And that's why you rented it. That's why. You were sent here.
Just to watch you, Mrs. Candy. Just to see that you stayed sensible.
Mr. Shelton did.
I was hoping you'd never change your mind about calling the police.
Don't.
I didn't want this part of it. This isn't the part I like.
Let me go. Let me go. Please.
Just relax, Mrs. Candy. Just take it easy.
Please.
Why, you're as light as a feather, Mrs. Candy. Just like my Aunt Martha would have been if I had an Aunt Martha.
Please, put me down. Please.
We've got a date now, Mrs. Candy.
Let me go. Don't
put up such a fight, Mrs. Candy. I'm sick, remember? Just shut your eyes. Please, shut your eyes and don't look down.
Oh, God. Stuart,
those stairs. Shut your eyes, old lady. They'll all be over.
Just be glad that it wasn't you at the bottom of those stairs.
Will he be all right, Dr. George?
Now, what do you want to worry about that man for? Truth is, his injuries don't amount to very much. A couple of broken ribs seem to be the worst of it. But he'll be a patient for some time before they can put him in prison where he belongs. Him and his friend. What was that man's name again?
You mean Mr. Chatham? Have they arrested him?
Yeah. That's what the police detective said.
I don't understand. Stuart's injuries aren't serious.
It's not the fall that made Winfield so sick. His case was diagnosed as simple pneumonia at first. And then I remembered about your first boarder. Nelson, was it?
No, of course.
Yes, Wilson.
But he had pneumonia, too. He died of it. Oh, is pneumonia contagious?
Yes, yes, it is. But this disease was even more contagious. It's a pneumonia caused by a disease called psittacosis, better known as parrot fever. You get it from sick birds, like the parakeets in your spare room.
Oh, no. Mr. Paulson's birds?
Sorry, Ada, but they had to be taken out and destroyed.
Oh, what a shame.
There's one reason I feel sorry for them. They saved your life. Made Mr. Winfield too weak even to throw a little old lady down a flight of steps.
Aye, those poor little creatures.
Yeah, but you can be grateful they didn't make you sick, too. Parrot fever is so contagious that no more than one person in 1,000 could be exposed to it and escape infection. It was pretty darn close to a miracle, Ada.
We're hard to kill, Doctor. Remember? The old ones are hard to kill.
They say that people are living longer than ever before. And when we look at Ada Canby, we can understand why. She's a tough old lady. So tough, she could withstand the threats of man, beasts, and bird. So let that be a warning to all those who think that our senior citizens are easy prey for crime. Watch out. They may turn the tables on you. Or the stairs. I'll be back shortly. We have one final comment for you. On behalf of Ada Canby and old people everywhere, there's a saying, there's no fool like an old fool. But it's also true that there's no wisdom and strength like old wisdom and strength. There. Does that make you feel better about your next birthday? Our cast included Agnes Moorhead, Leon Janney, and Roger DeCoven. The entire production was under the direction of Hyman Brown. Now, a preview of our next tale.
You spoil me shamefully.
And that night, I spoiled her just a bit more by bringing hot cocoa to her in bed. Drink it down now.
Yes.
Does it taste all right?
Oh, tastes just fine.
Now, that was very good news, because I'd prepared the hot cocoa myself, and I had no idea whether 25 melted sleeping pills would seriously affect the flavor.
This is E.G. Marshall inviting you to return to our Mystery Theater for another adventure in the macabre. Until next time,
macabre.
Pleasant dreams.
First.
CBS Mystery Theater, presented over WHAM.
Nope.
WHAM? WHAM Rochester. There you go.
Ham. Ham. H-A-M, ham.
What a ham. WHAM. What a ham.
Hey,
radio.
Ham radio. How about that?
Yep. Yeah. And otherwise known as shortwave. Yep. Otherwise known as shortwave radio, yeah. I don't know why they call it shortwave. It went around the world, you know?
Yeah.
I don't understand that.
The way it was explained to me is the wavelength is shorter, so that it travels better because there's less obstacles.
Okay. Sure.
You know what I mean? It gets through clouds better. You know what I, you know, when they're broadcasting something. That's the way it was explained to me. I don't know.
Okay.
Maybe somebody was pulling my leg. I don't know.
I don't know. Did you walk lopsided?
Yeah, but for reasons that we won't discuss on this show.
You know, we do have a lesson to learn if you'd like. We do have a lesson to learn if you'd like.
Thank gosh, because I don't. And I was trying up until the last moment. Erie House Radio proudly presents a Garless Moral of the Story.
Yes, apologies to Gar. Lots of apologies. Next time somebody gives you the bird, take it to the vet before you take it to your bedroom. There you go.
Gives you the bird?
Yeah.
Now that wasn't so bad, was it?
It was disgusting.
And you didn't think you could come up with one better than that, huh? Shame on you.
I know I wouldn't have. If you saw the most recent Erie House picture, you'll know what I mean. From King Kong there with Robert Armstrong.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, with Dale. I guess King Kong isn't really happy with your morals.
Well, I think the notion of me doing it terrified them in that photo.
Okay.
The very notion was petrifying. Well, we still got one more terrific tale.
Another time for another premiere episode. Again, not a pilot, but a premiere episode, because usually pilots are done before, well before the show actually goes on the air. And, they try it out with the audience and such and see how it reacts to it.
Yeah. This one means quite a bit, I think, for Dave and I, this subject of this particular radio program. We had a lot of fun with it when our local library did a tribute to the Man of Steel, since he was created here in the land of Cleves. And we did I got to help him on a very good, well, really it was a combined thing. It was for Weirdness
was
Really
combined.
Bad, but yet it was for Erie House TV.
It was. And on top of that, we did something actually better than what they did. We did Rick and I did a three-camera thing of interview with of Siegel's daughter, and a forum with more Cleveland history guys and the guys who have what the Siegel and Schuster organization that's in the area. One of them's here in Akron, and the other is Michael Zwinski. So
yeah,
and we did We did an amazing job with that.
We did varying versions, too. The full-length one was, what, over 4.5 hours, because we put all the Fleischer cartoons on there.
Yes.
The stamp commercial with Steve Reeves. Or, I mean, yeah, Steven, or George Reeves, rather.
So stamp day for
Superman,
For Superman, yeah.
We had that. We had a bunch of commercials.
Yep. Anything that was public domain, we got into.
Yeah, we grabbed everything we could and crammed it into a four-hour program, which, Dave, I think for Weirdness, you trim that down maybe to like a two-hour or two-and-a-half-hour.
Two hours, right.
Yeah.
Because I didn't include any of the other interviews and stuff, but yeah.
Well, that in 2 hours is your format, so.
2 hours is my format, right?
It's all good. All good in the hood. It's cool having the different versions.
But we got one version that we couldn't do there on video because it's a radio.
It is.
And this is aptly, for a Superman origin story, aptly called Baby from Krypton.
Yep. And so interesting that, you know, this was what? Less than 2 years after Superman was created and finally hit the really hit the big time, what, in 38 is when it finally was really recognized. And here we are in 1940 with the kickoff of the radio series that I was looking at it right here. There were 2,088 episodes from 1940 to 1951. Most of them starting off, and most of them were 15-minute daily episodes. But in 1949, they were lengthened to 30 minutes. I think it went to weekly then. Nearly all of those starred Bud Collier as Superman. And if Gar were here, he would tell us the reason they helped to introduce Batman into the series was so that Bud Collier could get a vacation. Batman would come in for a couple of weeks. So Bud Collier could take some time off and catch a breath and before he goes back into it again. So, yeah.
Yep.
Very cool.
Very cool. And so the original comic book came out in 1937 or 8? Don't remember. 38, I would say.
38. I think it's 38. Yeah.
Action Comics number one.
They've worked on it since they were in high school, but it took a little bit of time to get the attention they needed.
Yep, and then DC put out Action Comics number one, and then the whole Superman franchise had been created. Shortly after, we have the original broadcast date of this one for?
February 12th of 1940.
Boys and girls, your attention, please. Presenting a new exciting radio program featuring the thrilling adventures of an amazing and incredible personality. Faster than an airplane, more powerful than a locomotive, impervious
than a
to
bus.
Bullets.
Up in the sky, look,
it's a bird, it's a plane, it's Superman! And now, Superman. A being no larger than an ordinary man, but possessed of powers and abilities never before realized on Earth. Able to leap into the air an eighth of a mile at a single bound, hurdle a 20-story building with ease, race a high-powered bullet to its target, lift tremendous weights and rend solid steel in his bare hands as though it were paper. Superman, a strange visitor from a distant planet, champion of the oppressed, physical marvel extraordinary, who has sworn to devote his existence on Earth to helping those in need. As our story begins, we ask you to come with us on a far journey, a journey that takes us millions of miles from the Earth, where the planet Krypton burns like a green star in the endless heavens. Here, civilization is far advanced. It has brought forth a race of supermen, men and women like ourselves, but advanced to the absolute peak of human perfection. As we near Krypton, we see high walls and gleaming turrets. We approach the magnificent Temple of Wisdom. And there in a great hall, Jor-El, Krypton's foremost man of science, is about to address a meeting of the planet's governing council.
Attention! Attention, gentlemen! Jor-El speaks. Members of the council, I have completed my solar calculations. And much as I dread uttering these words, I have come to the conclusion Krypton is doomed.
Did I hear him right?
Gentlemen! Gentlemen! Gentlemen, hear him out. These internal quakes we've been experiencing, these volcanic eruptions, tidal waves, gas escaping from giant craters, all point to only one thing, gentlemen. Krypton is utterly and finally, doomed. One moment, gentlemen. One moment. There is no cause for anxiety. I am certain Jor-El has made a mistake. True, we have had a few minor quakes and eruptions, but nothing very serious. There must be some error in your calculations, Jor-El.
No, there is no error, Ozan. I only wish there were.
The sun is gradually drawing Krypton closer to it. Within a month, possibly only a week, the gravitational pull will be so tremendous that Krypton will not be able to weather the strain. And then our planet will explode like a giant bubble, destroying every living thing on it.
Gentlemen, assuming for the moment, Jor-El, that what you say is true, how are we to avoid it? What can we do to stop it?
There is only one way. As you all know, I have been working on a spaceship designed for interplanetary travel. With time and united effort, we might transport the entire population of Krypton to another world.
Impossible. Where would we go?
To the Earth. My studies tell me the atmosphere of the Earth is very nearly the same as our own.
You have been working too hard, Jor-El. You need a rest. Believe me, we have the utmost respect for your knowledge and integrity. But this is carrying it too far. Planets as large as Krypton do not explode, Jor-El.
Wait! Do you hear that, gentlemen? It's the forewarning of doom! Every moment is precious now. Things like that are sounding the death knell of Krypton. It will happen, gentlemen, and happen soon. When the last great eruption comes...
When it comes, Jor-El, it shall find all of us ready. If Krypton is to die, we shall die with it. The parting would be much too severe.
Very well. Glad of your light, Roseanne, and you members of the council. I have no time to laugh. My wife, Lara, and my infant son are dear to me. It is not my wish to stand by and see them destroyed. Laugh, all of you. But a time will come, and that time is perhaps very close at hand, when you will wish you had heeded the words of Jor-El. Now you think me a fool, but remember what I have said, gentlemen. When Krypton is shattered into 1,000,000,000 stars, when the glorious civilization we have built is no more, when you and your families are swept from the face of Krypton, like dust!
Order, gentlemen. Order. You have heard Jor-El speak. Is it your wish that we devote time and money to the building of spaceships for the transportation of Krypton's population to another planet?
No!
I'm sorry, Jor-El. The Council has spoken.
Yes. And signed the death warrants of every living thing on Krypton. Well, I have done my best to convince you. Now all that remains for me is to proceed with my own means of salvation, my own spaceship, to save the lives of those near and dear to me. As for the rest of you, may the gods have mercy on your soul.
Well, you're rather mad. He's absolutely mad.
Lara, I didn't see you.
I came out to take the air on the terrace. It's been terribly hot all day. Is that because we're being drawn to the sun, Jor-El?
Yes.
What did the council have to say about that?
I didn't mention it.
Is the model of your spaceship almost finished?
Yes, I just drove the last rivet. How does it look?
Splendid. But will it work?
That remains to be seen. If it does work, I shall immediately begin construction of another just like it, only much larger. One big enough to carry all three of us to another world.
Jor-El, when will that be? Every moment that we spend waiting and wondering...
Yes, I know, Lara. It's been hard on all of us, and particularly hard on you. How is the boy?
Sleeping, Jor-El. That quake this afternoon frightened him. But he's all right now. Can't you come in and look at him? You scarcely see him these days, what with working all hours on the spaceship model.
It can't be helped, dear. I'm racing against time. Right now, I'm anxious to know whether the model will behave as I hope.
How does it operate?
Very simply. When all is ready, I throw this switch... That closes the circuit, and electric energy builds up pressure in the atomic generators. Then, at the final moment, the pressure forces the ship from its carrier and speeds it on its way.
But where does it go?
Wherever it's pointed. This one I'm directing to the planet Earth.
Earth? What is that, Jor-El?
A planet smaller than our own, situated on the other side of the sun. It's inhabited by a race of people similar to ourselves.
Like ourselves?
Well... Only partly, of course, my dear. They're about the same size, but nowhere nearly as developed. Very weak and helpless, and with all their faculties extremely limited.
How do you mean?
Something like this. You know how far you step when you want to go somewhere?
Practically as far as I want. Why, one step takes me to Brotter's house near the fountain.
Exactly. Well, down where I'm sending this spaceship, it's quite different. An Earthman steps only 3 feet at a time at most, and everything else is in proportion.
And that's where we're going? Oh, how dreadful.
My dear, which would you rather do? Go to Earth and live, or stay on Krypton and die?
I'll do anything you say, Jor-El, anything. It doesn't matter to me whether we live or die as long as we're together. It's only the boy I worry about.
Yes, I know. Oh, Lara, darling, don't worry. He'll be saved.
When are you testing the spaceship model?
In the morning. Just as dawn breaks, I'll send it on its way, watching its flight through a high-powered telescope to see whether it lands safely on Earth.
Is Earth the only planet place we can go to, Jor-El?
We couldn't breathe on any other planet but the Earth. It happens to have an atmosphere similar to Krypton's.
I suppose you know best, Jor-El. Are you coming in? It seems to have gotten oppressively hot.
Yes, it has. I wonder. Lara, do you hear that?
Yes, Jor-El. What is it?
Subterranean explosions. Do you feel the ground trembling?
Yes, I do. Jor-El, do you think?
Lara. Lara, I'm afraid it's come. Where is the boy, Kal-El?
What do you mean?
Get him quickly. This is the end.
Jor-El, what can we do?
Nothing. I'm not ready. Oh, what a fool I've been to delay.
It isn't your fault, Jor-El. You did all you could.
If only this model were large enough, we could take a chance.
Jor-El, would it carry one of us safely to Earth?
Oh, I think so, but Lara, where are you going? Stay here with me.
I'm getting Kal-El. If one of us can be saved, Jor-El, it should be the boy.
No, Lara, come back. If one must go, it should be you. Lara, I said come back. Come back.
Here he is, Jor-El, still asleep. Goodbye, Kal-El.
Please, Lara.
No, Jor-El, listen to me. We both stay here. Kal-El goes in the spaceship. If there is a chance, Jor-El, it's one little chance I wanted for my son.
Maybe you're right, Lara.
Jor-El, look. The sky. It's fiery red. The mountains. Look, the mountains are falling in. Jor-El, what's happening?
The end of Krypton, Lara. Just as I foretold. This is the last great quake.
Jor-El, listen. Explosion.
Here, quick, give me the boy.
Kal-El. What are you doing, Jor-El?
Opening the door. Putting him inside.
Jor-El, the house is swaying. It's breaking apart. Look, Jor-El.
There, he's safe inside. Now for the switch. Stand back, Lara.
Oh, Jor-El, will he reach the Earth?
Only the gods know. But there's a chance, the only chance. Stand back now, Lara. I'm going to throw the switch.
Jor-El, it's getting dark. I can't see. What happened?
Fire. Smoke from the center of the planet. Not much time now.
Hold me, Jor-El. Has the spaceship gone?
No, not yet. Waiting for pressure. We may have been too late. If it doesn't work up soon, wait. Lara, it's off. It's on its way.
Jor-El, where are you?
Here beside you, Lara. Listen, can you hear me? Our boy, Kal-El. Our son, Lara. He's on his way. On his way to Earth.
Kal-El! Kal-El!
So the tiny rocket ship roars into the uncharted heavens as the mighty planet of Krypton explodes into millions of glowing fragments, glittering stars to remain forever in the night sky. Jor-El and Lara, devoted parents of the tiny boy, perish in the giant quake that destroys Krypton. But what of the rocket ship? Does it reach the Earth? Does it find its mark in all the far-flung darkness of space? Remember, don't miss the next installment of Superman. Up in the sky, look! It's a giant bird!
It's a plane!
It's Superman! Superman is a copyrighted feature appearing in Action Comics magazine.
Yes, he did.
There you go.
And if you have a nice, clean copy of that magazine, you got a few pennies on you. Sharing some interesting facts. I guess he went to school with someone who went on to draw for Superman for quite a while. Over at
that
DC.
Is really cool.
Yeah.
Mike Mace, part of my show and a good friend, he wanted to grow up to be a comic book artist, and he never made it quite there, but he did get to work for Stan Lee for a little while, basically by reviewing his made-for-TV movies and telling them, you know, what was wrong with them. And It was a kind of a neat little relationship he had with Stan Lee there.
Yeah, kind of like Sheldon. No. With a restraining order. No, I think Sheldon got a restraining order. Yeah. not Mike Mace, though. No.
Yeah. No. Well, you see where some people. No.
It would have been a great story.
It would have been. What a weekend this has been of all first issues, first programs of shows.
Yep. Makes me feel really dreamy.
Dreamy?
Really dreamy.
Well,
yeah.
In that case, what should we do next week on Eerie House Radio?
I think we should be dreaming all weekend long with stories from alien worlds, The Shadow, and Blondie. With stories about dreaming, and then CBS Radio Mystery Theater returns next Saturday. That's right here on Eerie House Radio and Eerie House Oldie Timey Radio.
Yep, another first program for us with Alien Worlds.
I want to learn more about that show next week.
Another program from the Silver Age of Radio, as Dale has so aptly named it, in the 1970s.
Stop.
Oh, for sure.
To me, it was a parallel of like comic books had a golden age, which was roughly the golden age, parallel on the time chart, pretty close to golden age of radio, and then you had the silver age of comics, which came around the 60s. Radio was about the same.
And I think with radio's golden age, you also had the golden age of short stories. You know, when you had all these people putting together 30-minute programs, some of them original, but some of them based on other stories and such. You know, it just coincides with each other. And again, the early radio had so much to do with the pulp magazines.
Yep, source of many a good story. Good short story.
And so many magazines that aligned themselves with it or created their own programs from Red Book to anything that was a Reader's Digest and Hallmark greeting cards, all these that created their own programs and got the stories to put them all together.
Maybe we'll see a resurgence of that. Who knows? Not a bad idea.
Yeah, not a bad idea at all. If people aren't too overwrought about all the CGI, it's you can still have some awful interesting stories without it.
Yep. Well, we want to thank you guys for this 6-year ride that have been with us. I know Fogsbane's have been with us the whole way.
I believe so, yeah.
CW Gar. Has been with our team from the first day, sort of. So it took her a while for us to get her to come on.
And then Gar, who like we found out from the second show forward, been part of the show, whether he's in the studio with us or sitting in his chair listening, throwing lines in the chat, getting ready for his own show on Saturday night.
That means they were meant to be here.
Absolutely.
Yep. As part of the team and our great listeners who are with us all the time. We've got others that we don't really see as often, but we see them on the internet. There's a reason why we get a lot of listens in Sweden. Thanks, Jennifer. Chris, thank you for being a regular listener, and a happy new year to everybody. A real nice 2023 for
That's
you
right. Whether
and
you're
me.
Listening, whether you're listening or not, have a good happy new year, right?
Yeah, even if you're not listening, although we want the people who are listening more so.
Yeah, well, more so, yeah.
Because we appreciate you a little bit more, but yeah, you know, if the other ones do fine. You know, I... tonight we'll get Vincent for the way out the door, and we again wish a real good 2023 to one and all.
The castle lights are growing dim. There's no one left but me and him. When next we meet in Frankenstone. Don't come alone.
Can you dig it?
I can dig it. Dear Odell. Good night.
Good night.
Oh, perfect. That was fun. Went by fast. It always does. It always does. Yeah. Like, it looks so, you know, the week is so long. Especially the closer I get to retirement, the weeks are longer and longer. Yeah, like, oh, God, this will never end.
And luckily, this kind of thing is a lifelong hobby, you know?
Yeah, it is. We could do this for a while, as long as our voices hold out.
Yeah.
There's certainly an endless supply of radio. Folks, you should see, for you listening in the archives, what I'm looking at and just staring at, tons and tons and tons of themes ready to be dropped and dragged into our schedule. We try not to plan too far ahead, because sometimes we get these great guests. You've been here with us, folks, with Mark Dowidziak and Mike Arnett. Come on, help me, Dave. We've had so many.
You remember the guy that does all the voices for the new Adventures of Johnny Dollar?
Yes.
Joe's. We've had some really cool people who really loves Michael Giorgio, who wrote some of the radio plays that I produced, and he even co-hosted one night. And it didn't seem like much until Dale really got him going. And then the amazing stories the guy had at some of these writers' conventions and stuff. So really cool. We got to get to John Drew, who was the other guilty person who wrote some stories for us. And he's out of New York, and he's done a lot of convention things where he has actually worked quite a bit with Lee Majors and the Bionic Woman as well at these events. So he does a podcast, several podcasts, one of them on Batman and some things like that. Started off when I knew him, when he was first writing for me, he was like an assistant manager bartender, worked his way up to high school teacher. And he's now even, they have a TV studio in there that he helps teach kids about the art of making art. That way, you know. So, I'm going to aim to get him in this year. I almost had him one time, but he was not able to. He had a car accident on the way home and just got a little distracted.
Ouch.
So we'll. He was okay. It just kind of messed up his whole night, and I can understand that.
Yep.
So we'll reach out to John again this year, and we'll get him in here. Mark Dowidziak has a new book coming out on Edgar Allan Poe on Valentine's Day. We'll need to be getting him in around that time as well.
Yep.
And I hope some of you who have
gotten the book from Julian Stone, it's alive. That was fun, too. He was a recent guest.
That was fun. And the other guy that writes the Gothic writing guy, I've got his book here, too.
Yep.
It's the Gothic guy.
I don't even have to leave my basement and meet these incredible people.
Tim Ahearns. I'm sorry, Tim.
Tim Ahearns. Oh, yeah. I love that genre. I read so much of that. So his book is enjoyable to read.
I just love the sort of sorcery stuff. We had Michael Olszewski when we had our first Superman weekend there with a series of stories and so much fun.
Yep. And we've had you, our listeners. And that's the most important.
That's
thing.
Right.
That's the most important
and
thing. Without you were nothing. Nothing.
Especially for putting up with Dale and I, and especially me.
No.
Get a little silly
from
time to time.
You're the good one, Dave. You're the good one.
That's
I'm quite convinced I'm the more evil influence.
I don't know. We get along famously and have great respect for each other's work as we do for Gars. And that's where I'm ready to tune over to pretty soon here myself. Second, yep. Horrible Horror starring Gar the Ghoul on as Dale said, on them their Twitches. And actually during the week it records his show and it stays up for a week, so you can catch his show even if you can't catch it live.
Yep. Gar 2 has a bit Twitch. Of an archive. It's a limited archive, but it's an archive nonetheless.
Yes. A limited archive that only lasts a week or two and wipes out the one before it when you record one. So I'm looking forward to it, as he's always a hoot and a holler, whether he's here on Erie House with us or on his own show. And,
yep, or even on the phone, on a personal phone call. He's a riot.
Yes. And we have both you and he and he and I, we've all had some amazing phone conversations. Even he talked to Fogsbane on the phone the other day, he was telling me, and they had a great, great conversation. So just a really good person. And Dale, he's probably gone through more physical issues than you and I ever have combined. And yet he just keeps going on, and he stays so positive and keeps trying to put a smile on other people's faces. And you listen to him or talk to him, you can't help it.
Yep. So get on over there and watch. Not just listen, but watch. Horrible Horror starring Gary Oldman.
And if you're listening here on this weekend, Tuesday, shameless plug, Tuesday, I believe, I don't know which one, but I'll be on the Vortex. And we'll have one of our two-hour weirdness, really bad movie shows. And stop on in, and we'll live chat, come for the chat, stay for the movie. How's that?
There you
go. We will talk. We will take it all from there. But in that case, I think I'm ready to tune in to Gar. So perhaps, Dale, my friend, as we tip into our seventh season, it's time to bring in the one, the only, Jimmy Durante. So turn off the house lights. Good night. Spotlight.
Good night.
Three spotlights.
Good night.
It's time to say good night. What for this sake but good night? We've had a few laughs, and it's time for toodaloo. Aribo, up we the same, and
Inca-dinka-dinka-doo.
Good night. Good night.
Somehow he says it better than me.
Yep.
Good night, folks. And good night, Mrs. Calabash, wherever.
And now, folks, it's time to say good night. We sincerely appreciate your patronage and hope we've succeeded in bringing you an enjoyable evening of entertainment. Please drive home carefully and come back again soon. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.